do. Johnny Wendell will be sitting in for me tomorrow night, and the rest of the week, Sam Cedar. Oh, no, no, oh, that, oh, oh, damn, oh, that was, oh, Jesus, that was last week. Good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on NOVAM Radio. Thanks a lot for joining us tonight. Thanks to Johnny Wendell and Sam Cedar for holding the fort last week. A lot of stuff happened last week. A lot of people died. I'm probably not even going to get into that, but you know what I'm talking about. We do have a lot of ground to cover tonight. Just weird stuff. The weirdest thing. Yeah, we'll get to the Barack Obama cover, but weirder than that. Last night, after sitting out on the back porch listening to 8 trillion tree frogs finally synchronize their seductive, raspy noise. That's what they do. You know, they start out early in the evening here in Georgia, and it's a cacophony of noise that makes no sense. And by 11 o'clock at night, or thereabouts, they're in harmony, rhythmically speaking. And it's maddening. But, you know, to humans, it's great. To the tree frogs. But I digress. So anyway, after sitting out there and trying my damnedest to finish off a bottle of Jack Black that we didn't get rid of up in the mountains and not succeeding, I went upstairs to the bedroom where we have not a very large TV, but big enough to lay in bed and watch sometimes. And Kathy was watching, while she was working on the internet, she had on in the background the Miss Universe contest. Now, I didn't know what it was at first. There was Jerry Springer and one of the Spice Girls. And none of it made any sense. And then all of a sudden, the beautiful women started parading. Oh, it's a beauty contest. Okay. Miss Universe. And where was it coming from? Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. Now that kind of knocked me down. Ho Chi Minh City, of course, being the former Saigon. And I said to Kathy, you know, once it dawned on me what was going on, I said, you know, I wonder if 58,000 plus ghosts that hang out near the Vietnam War Memorial in D.C. are stirring tonight. I couldn't believe it. A goddamn beauty pageant in Ho Chi Minh City? Now, is there anything, first of all, beauty pageants suck. We all know that. Especially Miss Universe. What's up with that? But, look, I know the Vietnamese whipped our ass royally. And it had nothing to do with press coverage back here in the States. It had to do with the fact that we were the bad guys. We were the invader. We were the scum. We were the people who came in and murdered 2 million of their civilians. You knew as soon as I got back from vacation I'd start this crap again, right? I know. That was bad enough. I'm still stuck on the images of the U.S. Embassy in Saigon from 1974, 75. When was it? We don't even remember, do we? Of the Vietnamese that we used and then said, screw you, here come the VC, you're all dead. Watching the VC clinging to the helicopter runners, trying to get out of there. I have those images. Now, superimposed last night, a beauty pageant. Done at, I believe it was 6 a.m., 7 a.m. local time. They kept a little live button up there on the screen the entire time. When the camera would pan back, you would see maybe an auditorium maybe one-tenth filled with what? People. What kind of people? Vietnamese people. Watching this jerk-ass Jerry Springer? And a Spice Girl introducing beautiful women? Did you notice of the five finalists, four of them were Latino and one was Russian? What do you think of that? Of course, the most beautiful woman there, Miss USA, fell on her ass. That's the second year in a row, isn't it? Where the American candidate, thud. Not that I care, but you get the point. Vietnam. Now, during the little promo breaks in there, they would take the camera into different parts of Vietnam to show to the global audience. One of the places the camera went was Ya Trang, the Ya Trang Valley. Any of you men, mostly, over the age of 55, remember what the Ya Trang Valley was all about? Huh? Look it up on Wikipedia if you don't. Miss Universe contest in Hanoi with Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer and one of the Spice Girls prancing around the stage introducing mostly Western beauty queens. And those 58,000 people whose names are etched on the wall in D.C. Son of a bitch. This is horrifying. What makes it horrifying? The beauty pageant? Nah. The fact that once again, the power lied America into a war that cost 2 million Vietnamese, a couple of 100,000 Indochinese, 58,000 Americans, all dead. How many Americans out there tonight are still suffering PTSD from Vietnam? So what are we going to have 30 years from now? Brought to you live from Fallujah. Huh? What do you think it's going to be? Maybe it'll be the American Kennel Club dog finals. I don't get this stuff. I don't. It gives me a headache to even think about it. To even think about the fact that Jerry Springer and a Spice Girl was prancing around a stage in Ho Chi Minh City, introducing women for the Miss Universe contest. A place where hundreds of thousands of people died because of the aggressive, imperialist, sick, destructive nature of four U.S. presidents and the entire U.S. power structure over a 35-year period. I wish somebody could explain that to me, and nobody can.
Could have been worse.
Yeah?
Yeah, Colin Powell could have been up there in a coconut bra.
That was
singing and
no, that was 4 years ago.
And maybe Dancing with the Stars with Springer or something. It would have been a little bit more entertaining.
I couldn't. And every time they said live from Ho Chi Minh City, I thought I was going to lose it. So to the American soldiers who retired, of course, you guys were gray and paunchy and you got your diabetes now and your hemorrhoids and, your high blood pressure and you still have those miserable nightmares and you're in your late 50s, early 60s, or even older, mid 60s, right? And you got grandkids and you still remember the firefights and you remember the death and the destruction and the fragging and the drugs and the madness and the insanity. I just would like to ask you, purely on a rhetorical basis, how did it make you feel last night to watch a goddamn beauty pageant from Ho Chi Minh City with Jerry Springer and a Spice Girl? Jesus, you talk about falling through the looking glass completely. Okay, just had to get that off my chest. Sorry for the caca words. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Why is my father? perhaps the most important lesson that I learned in Vietnam is that you cannot confide a guerrilla war with conventional forces.
Yeah. 21 past the hour. The cover of, I think it's next week's New Yorker. I don't think it's even out yet, has it? Has it been released yet? It's the July 21st issue. There it is, a satirical portrayal of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. As soon as you look at it, if you're a regular reader of the New Yorker, I guess, you know, it's like, boom, oh, yeah, I get it. I get it. But, you know, whether I get it or you get it is beside the point. The point is we live in a country now, a political atmosphere where satire is wasted, where irony no longer exists. Jesus Christ, take a look at what's going on. I'm not going to go down the list, but just take a list. Take a look at what the Bush crime family has done to the country. Take a look what the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and all his, bastard offspring, the kind of political atmosphere that they've produced in this country, the polarization, the ugliness, the hate. Look at the Swift Boat thugs. I mean, it just goes on and on. So the artist at the New Yorker comes up with a cover that is absolutely brilliant. There it is. Every little bit of right-winger wet dream is right there. Burning the American flag, picture of Bin Laden on the wall, Barack in Muslim clothing, Michelle dressed like a gorilla with an AK-47, and, of course, the terrorist hand bump. But we can't, we can't handle something like this in the United States of America. What are you kidding me? I watched a little bit of Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, on Overman's program tonight. I think Maddow gets it. I think a couple of her guests gets it. I watched a little bit of, Chris Matthews' program. A couple of those people got it. But, you know, we live in the United States of America, you know, in a country where what's the Newsweek poll? 36% of Americans polled believe that Barack Obama is really a Muslim. A 12% think he was sworn into office with his hand on a Quran. See, this is another reason I hate religion. You know, the whole thing, just one religion uses the other religion. You know, the Muslims will tell you that the Satan-inspired Christians, and they're right. And the Christians will tell you the Satan-inspired Muslims, and they're right. They're all Satan-inspired. Every single religion on earth is filth because it rots your brain and stops you from thinking. I'm not necessarily talking about the old religions. I'm talking about the three or four that are devouring the planet now. But there's the picture. There's the picture. And I can, in the first place, had it not been for television picking up on this, the rubes and the yahoos, the knuckle-dragging redneck freaks out there, who wouldn't know the New Yorker magazine from a hot fudge sundae, would never have seen it. New Yorker, what's that? What's a New Yorker? But thanks to our instant mass media and the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and his filth, it's all over the place. Every single illiterate, half-baked, right-wing Republican redneck, but I repeat myself over and over and over again, will take a look at this now and be absolutely convinced. See? I knew it! I knew it! They're going to burn the flag! Remember when the Bush crime family took office after the Clintons? Remember the stories? Well, they put the F word all over on the computer. They removed the W key. Every time you try to log off, it has pornography. Oh, they did. Remember all that? And remember how the yahoos in this country, which is about 72% of us, ate it up? Remember that? I think the New Yorker did a wonderful job. Absolutely amazing. I think the artist who put this cover together is a genius. Because he went right for the Yahoo's groin. With his size 12 brogans. Right in the crotch! A kick! Drop kick him! You're damn right! For the people on the left who don't get this, well, I can certainly understand. I can understand. I'm not going to bust up on my homeboys and homegirls. I'm not going to bust up on you at all. I understand. I understand the fear and loathing that this cover might inspire for Obama supporters or Democrats, you know, normal people. And I acknowledge that. I do. I acknowledge that. At the same time, I think the artist at the New Yorker did an excellent job. Just stomp them in their goddamn faces. If they can't take it, let them run and suck their thumbs and hide under John McCain's skirts. Okay? Okay.
Brainwashed under duress, brainwashed by the media, yeah. Brainwashed by the press, brainwashed by computer, brainwashed by mobile phone, brainwashed by the satellite, brainwashed to the bone.
I see a lot of the Bubbas who work in my administration who've shown up.
Yeah. Right, now let me get this straight. Jerry Springer, one of the Spice Girls, and a bunch of well-endowed, attractive by the geometric standards imposed on the rest of us, women on a stage in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon, with a beauty pageant being beamed live around the globe. Okay. And then the other thing that was just absolutely mind-boggling is the New Yorker cover. Ben writes in, next week's cover should be John McCain in a Vietnamese army uniform holding a Vietnamese flag and clutching a document labeled Secret Orders. I think you'll agree that would be just as funny as this week's cover. Yeah, but sure it would. But then every right-wing twit in the country would just wet themselves or soil their underwear, just screaming and yelling about how America was being overrun by left-wing, commie, flag-burning, flag-lapel-pin-hating. One of the interesting things, where Kathy and I were in the mountains, there was no television, literally. Thank you, Jesus. There was no television, so we jonesed the first day, and then that was it. Now, we were told there was no internet service either, but Kathy was able to, we were up about almost 6,000 feet, so I don't know what floats around up there, but she managed to snag an internet connection for us. So anytime we really wanted to be bummed out and made sick and ill, all we had to do is log on. So we tended not to do that either. But one of the stories that came through, and I think it came through in one of the local papers up there, was about the rescue of Ingrid Betancourt. Now, the rescue occurred, I think that was before we left, right? But the follow-up to the story, that just like the Pat Tillman story, just like the Jessica Lynch story, the rescue of Ingrid Betancourt and the other people who were rescued with her, thank God they're free, the whole thing was Disney World. The whole thing was Disney World. It was a joke. It was all pre-planned. According to the press in the UK, is it the Independent? Which one is it? $20 million U.S. dollars changed hands. Swiss Radio reported that ransom was paid to the FARC. Be careful how you say that one. Of around $20 million. The Swiss Radio said that the United States, which had three citizens among those freed, was behind the deal, that the, quote, the whole operation afterwards was a setup, end quote. Now, really, when you get down to it, it doesn't make any difference. If these people are free after being held in the jungles of Colombia for as long as they were held, I think hostage-taking is a clear mark of cowardly sons of bitches. I don't care what their cause is. I feel the same way about terrorism, and I understand one man's terrorist, another man's freedom fighter, yada, yada, yada. To that, I say bat squeeze. If I'm doing something to your country and you don't like it, then come and get me. Don't take a bunch of civilians hostage. Don't blow up a goddamn bus. Don't plant a car bomb in the market right before sundown. You cowardly snakes. I don't care what the organization is. I don't care. You don't kill innocent people. And you don't hold innocent hostages. You don't. Not unless you're a cowardly, sneaky son of a bitch. Then you do it. So much for FARC. So much for any organization. And don't send me emails now telling me about all the freedom fighters who have no choice. Yes, they do have choices. You don't blow up school children to make your political point. You save your money and you buy jet airplanes and then you attack your oppressor. But you don't blow up school children. Ever! And you don't kidnap innocent people and hold them against their will. You don't torture either. Wait a minute, what am I saying? Oh, Jesus God! You were on vacation too long, Malloy! So it turns out that the freeing of these hostages from the jungles of Colombia was one more trip to the Magic Kingdom. The Swiss radio reported that the wife of one of the hostages' guards was the go-between. And I like the way the British press reports it. If proved true, the allegations would be hugely embarrassing for the Colombian government, which was showered with praise for the efficiency of the operation. Many commentators had predicted that it would even spell the end of FARC as a credible force. So Ingrid Betancourt, who should really exact revenge now by going back to Colombia and running for president, which is what she was planning on doing to begin with, but she and 14 others freed. And the cover story is the rebels were tricked into the terrorists. FARC started out, I think, rather honorably, but became nothing but a bunch of thugs and drug runners. And if you're a lefty and disagree with that, don't send me an email. I don't want to read your email. But the cover story is the terrorists were tricked into handing over these 15 people in a Colombian covert military operation. Now, the latest story is the whole thing was an American operation. And before the Disney World aspect of this was revealed, the sister, Ingrid Betancourt's sister, who is a former Colombian senator, Astrid, the sister, believed that Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez was indispensable to the efforts made for Ingrid's release. The sister said, quote, Chavez knows how to talk to the FARC. He knows how to advance things. For us today, President Chavez is indispensable, end quote. Okay, well, not to take anything away from Senor Chavez, but that appears to be bat droppings also, right? Huh? Come on, Ingrid. Or not Ingrid, but what's the sister's name? Oh, what did I just say, Kathy? Astrid. Astrid and Ingrid. Oh, God. Astrid. You may have the story a little bit wrong there. But, you know, nothing is what it appears to be. Nothing. Have you ever noticed that? It's all illusion. Everything is illusion, except the bank failures. Those aren't illusions, huh? And do you like the way the coverage of this bank failure on the West Coast is being handled? Anyone who had under $100,000 is completely covered by the FDIC. Of course, you dumb jackasses who had over $100,000, you're screwed! Ha! We don't insure you! Well, why should they? You know, according to Ron Paul supporters and a lot of right-wing Republicans, what's the point in the FDIC anyway? I mean, come on. It's free enterprise. Oh, this is not free enterprise. This is going to be, as I wrote in my mini-blog today at NovaMradio.com, this is another example of heads, they win, tails, we lose. Once again, who do you think? Who do you think is going to bail these miserable pirates out, huh? Who do you think is going to bail out all these failed banks and mortgage institutes? Who is who's going to bail out this rapacious punk ass who ran what was the big one? Countrywide. Not him. Not the billionaire who ripped everybody off. This is how the game is played. You and I, once again, will take it in the chops, just like we did back in the 80s with the SNL, just like we did with Enron in the 90s or the 2000s or whatever. Here we go again. Here we go again. It's not your game, Truth Seeker, and it's not mine, and it hasn't been for 50 years. It's their game, and you and I will clean up the mess, always, always. Whether the mess is in Iraq, whether the mess is on Wall Street, whether the mess is in bank failures, who gets to clean it up? You and I. Do we get to share in the profits? Get real. So. But the coverage of, what's the name of the bank, the big one that failed on the West Coast? I mean, is there anything? Is there anything? And I address this to you sniveling right-wing Republican cowards out there who are trying desperately to ram your head up John McCain's skirts to hide from the terrorists. Is there anything your boy or your group of boys has done that's good for this country? And the answer is no, of course not. Absolutely nothing. Take a look around, folks. You want more of this? I'm not talking to you dumbass Republicans.
Oh, did you see the cover of New Yorker? We were right. We were right.
You want more of this? Is there anybody in this? What is the latest polls? 48% support Barack Obama. 42 or 3% support John McCain. Support him for what? No wonder the cover of the New Yorker magazine has the entire country in a dither, huh? God, I got so many emails here I want to share with you, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. Anyway, Pray 2 wrote in, Indy Mac, that was the name of the one that failed, my bad. Big SNL, second largest failure ever. The Fed has a list of 70 banks considered dodgy. I've heard it's more than that, Prairie 2. Indy Mac was not on the list. Oh, at least 2,000 banks are one good depositor rumor away from failure. There you go. Where's Jimmy Stewart when we need him? Oh, that's right. He's dead, just like our economy. Man, the number done on us, on the entire country, by the Bush crime family and the Republican enablers, have you ever seen anything like this? This is astonishing. And then that pig, That oh God, watch your language, Malloy. Phil Graham, huh? How about him? How about Phil Graham? A nation of whiners, you toad looking freak. Oh Jesus, please God, give me 10 minutes in a dark room with Phil Graham. Please. Oh, a nation of whiners. Oh, and by the way, do you still have that sound, Kathy, of Bush talking about how he's going to give up golf? Do you have that handy? Handy enough to play it right now? Let's see. This is Bush about golf.
I feel I owe it to the families to be as, you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Well, guess what? Next Monday, Bush's spider-like parents are going to be hosting a big golfing fundraiser for John McCain near their home in Kennebunkport, Maine. And according to a solicitation sent by the McCain camp for the low, low price of $5,000, you too can play around a golf at Cape Arundel Golf Course. Both President Bush and Governor Jeb Bush will be stopping by to greet the foursomes. The course is reserved for this private group, and VIPs will be visiting during your round of golf. This event is a great way to end a weekend getaway, and we would be honored if you can attend. No, I didn't get this invitation. $5,000. Think Progress has this up. It's unclear what Bush will do while everyone else is ignoring the war and golfing. Perhaps he'll ride around in golf carts or simply make swinging motions with his arms. No word on whether Condoleezza Rice will attend, but she may, considering that golf helps her while she's trying to stay in shape. As Think Progress reported, Rice recently told the Golf Channel that despite the fact that Bush has given up golf to honor U.S. troops, she has been, quote, playing and playing a lot since the war began. You evil sons of bitches, every one of you. You evil scum. McCain also seems to have very few qualms about golfing during wartime. In fact, on his campaign website, he sells golfing gear. Jerry Springer and a Spice Girl. Miss Universe contest on a stage in downtown Ho Chi Minh City. Son of a bitch. And then there's this. Bush has given Israel a tentative okay to strike Iran. According to the website Israel Today, quote, U.S. President George W. Bush has given Israel the go-ahead to draw up a full plan of attack to take out Iran's main nuclear facilities and to present it to him for final approval. According to a senior Pentagon official who spoke to London's Sunday Times, the official said the president had given Israel an, quote, amber light, end quote, explaining that, quote, amber means get on with your preparations, stand by for immediate attack, and tell us when you're ready, end quote. Israeli officials who had previously admitted to preparing for a possible strike on Iran's nuclear facility said such an attack would be impossible without a green light from Washington because, well, you know, Israeli planes need to travel through U.S.-controlled Iraqi airspace. U.S.-controlled Iraqi airspace. Israel would also need America's assistance in dealing with the diplomatic aftermath. The diplomatic aftermath? Are you out of your minds? The diplomatic aftermath? The Pentagon source said that the Bush administration had already determined not to attack Iran, but noted that, quote, the president is really preoccupied with the nuclear threat against Israel, and I know he doesn't believe that anything but force will deter Iran, end quote. Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak is scheduled to travel to the U.S. Today, as a matter of fact, where he will meet with various Pentagon officials to discuss how best to handle the Iran threat. Bush has given Israel the go-ahead? Bush has given Israel the go-ahead.
You can have an amber light. You have an amber light. Red light, green light, amber light. Fooled you. You thought it's going to be green. Huh? All right, go back. Start over. Okay, red light. Green light. Red light. Green light. Amber light. Son of a bitch. I mean, this is taxing, isn't it? This is very hard to get your mind around. George W. Bush has given Israel permission to strike Iran. Meanwhile, Jerry Springer and one of the Spice Girls dancing around on a stage in downtown Ho Chi Minh City yesterday to host the Miss Universe contest in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon. Wow. We'll be back after. You're being very hysterical, Mike, just like my 13-year-old and her little group of friends. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Not hysterical. Overly dramatic. Seven past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Again, mega thanks to Sam Cedar for covering this microphone as much as he did while I was off last week. And also Johnny Wendell, who sat in, Monday a week ago. Scott in San Diego writes, so George W. Bush, a Vietnam AWOL, who gave up golf in solidarity with the troops, is now going to have a golf fundraiser for a Vietnam veteran that votes against veterans' benefits. That kind of pegs the irony meter. Right. A couple of emails. Patricia writes, will you please talk in great detail about the amount of money that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will cost us? In addition to that, this morning on Tom Hartman's show, he discussed how the bailout will involve printing more money with nothing to back it up, which will force inflation through the roof. We are buying debt with very high risks because there are going to be many banks which will take the fall because they're insolvent. Please give us your impression of the scary situation that Bozo Bush has put us in. Thank you, Patricia. Patricia, I could no more do that than fly to the moon, but my colleague Tom Hartman will do an excellent job. When Tom Hartman talks, people listen, all right? Hartman can explain this stuff. I, on the other hand, am an hysterical screamer. So I can't, you know, I can get two sentences into an explanation and then I lose it and I go berserk. Hartman is very calm. He listened to Hartman. Prairie 2 writes, regarding Iran, have you noticed all of a sudden everything has shifted? Before I get to Prairie 2's email here, how everything has shifted. The saber rattling from the Bush thugs, I think Condoleezza Rice must have just absolutely bitch-slapped Dick Cheney and told him to sit down and shut up. It's her turn to do something while she's Secretary of State, because all of a sudden Cheney, you know, kind of squeaked. Maybe she threatened to, you know, bring a microwave oven near him or something. I don't know. But Prairie 2 writes, Mike, remember 2 weeks ago when Chucklenut suddenly started talking about diplomacy with Iran? And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs started going around saying, we don't want war with Iran, but
you know, of course, we could handle the threat if needed. Apparently, the way they handled the threat was to bug out. The excuse was that the USS Abraham Lincoln was moved to provide close air support for the Afghan campaign. Seems odd that they decided this late into the summer fighting that they needed to do this, and they couldn't spare any of the other seven super carriers to do the job. What happened to protecting the oil tankers in the Persian Gulf? The most important mission of the past 40 years. The last time the United States Navy didn't have a presence there, John McCain was still crashing biplanes. The press has tried to make it sound like this is a threat against Israel, but the word torpedo managed to get through. Iran is a threat against Israel. Long-range hypersonic anti-ship missile didn't translate from Persian. No talk of sea embargoes lately, but to keep anybody from paying attention, the people who brought us, "I'm coming to you," gave us a pair of still pictures that they claimed proved the Iranians were trying to hide a misfire of their missiles. One picture was supposedly photoshopped by Iran, but the pictures were both the same frame from the video the Iranians released to the press. Not much point in doctoring still pictures when you put the video out over the internet first. It's not likely that Iran told us to leave and Chucklenuts showed them his yellow stripe. More probably, the Joint Chiefs are afraid Israel is crazy enough to attack Iran, hoping that when Iran sinks a U.S. carrier with 5,000 men in retaliation, that we will then give a massive response. Secretary of Defense Gates has purged all the Armageddon Christianists out of the U.S. Air Force, but the Israelis seem to be another matter. Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting take. Yeah. The Iranians are not the Iraqis. Somebody needs to tell Bush that. Not those in the inner circle of the Bush crime family, like Cheney and Bolton and the rest of these monsters. They want death and destruction. Cheney is soon going to die. His heart is going to explode. One of these days, he's going to get up from a huge pasta dinner. He's going to stand up too quick, and there will be this loud... And that's it. So before he goes, Cheney wants to effect as much death and blood and disaster and destruction as he possibly can. He still has to out-poison Dragul. He has to do more than Dragula. Count Dragula. He's got a ways to go. He's still trying for Hannibal Lecter status. So, but that certainly makes sense. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the sinking of a U.S. warship the size of the USS Abraham Lincoln, a massive aircraft carrier? How many people on that? 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people? Kind of like the USS Liberty on a much larger scale. And then there's this. Iran said today it has discovered a new oil field in the hydrocarbon-rich province of Khuzestan? Be careful with that one. With more than 1 billion barrels of crude in place, this is according to the French news agency, Agence France-Presse, Oil Minister Golem Hossein Nozare said the oil fields hold 1.1 billion barrels of sweet crude, of which 233 million barrels are recoverable, whatever. That's according to the oil ministry's news agency. Golem told reporters after a cabinet meeting that the field is in the area of Andameshk, a town in Khuzestan province of southwestern Iran that borders Iraq. Production started in February from Iran's biggest offshore oil field, Azadegan, which is estimated to have 42 billion barrels of crude oil in place. Well, Iran has got to go. They have that much oil? Oh, Jesus. Come on. Come on, George. Move on them. That's our oil. John McCain, in a revealing interview with the New York Times. Now, keep in mind, McCain is an adoptive parent himself. In an interview with the New York Times, he declared that he opposed the right of gay couples to adopt children, even if it meant leaving children in orphanages. How about if it meant leaving them on the street? Where do you draw the line, John, you sick son of a bitch? Question from the New York Times. President Bush believes that gay couples should not be permitted to adopt children. Do you agree with that? McCain. I think, my friends, that we've proven that both parents are important, my friends, in the success of a family. So, no, I don't believe, my friends, in gay adoption. But even if the alternative is the kid staying in an orphanage or not having parents, my friends, I encourage adoption, and I encourage opportunities for people to adopt children, and I encourage the process being less complicated so they can adopt, my friends, as quickly as possible. And Cindy and I are proud of being adoptive parents. But your concern would be that the couple should be a traditional couple. Yes, my friends. Now, you have to stop and consider that McCain's position mirrors that of only one state out of 50. Florida forbids all forms of gay adoption. A March 2007 study estimated that 65,000 adopted children are living with a gay or lesbian parent, and determined that a national ban on lesbian, gay, and bi transgendered foster care could cost anywhere between $87 million and $130 million. Well, there's got to be a price tag, right? Only one state. Way to go, John. You are mainstream, aren't you, buddy? I can hear you coming. No question answered. Well, why do you decide? You won't let you kill the laughter.
The Mike Malloy Show. Square. Talk radio matters here.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it
21 past the hour. McCain did it again today, by the way. Another one of his gaffes. These are not gaffes. When he opens his mouth, the ignorance that rolls out almost makes George Bush look articulate. It's unbelievable. I really didn't think that the Republicans could vomit up on the national political stage another jackass like George Bush. By God, they've done it. What did he say the other day? He doesn't know how to watch the Internet. You don't watch the Internet, you freak. But he said today, quote, I was concerned, my friends, about a couple of steps that the Russian government took in the last several days, my friend. One was reducing the energy supplies to Czechoslovakia, unquote. Now, of course, there has not been a Czechoslovakia since 1993. That's 15 years ago. It doesn't exist. There's the Czech Republic, and there's Slovakia. Alex Koppelman, writing at Salon, says, I'm sure McCain will now be extra careful not to accidentally refer to Austria-Hungary. Yeah, well, unbelievable. McCain, Czechoslovakia. Jesus, God. But, you know, I'm still hung up on what Graham said. It was an interview with the Mooney-owned Washington Times. That's owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, who considers himself to be the latest incarnation of the Judeo-Christian Messiah. Anyway, in that interview, McCain's top economic advisor, Phil Graham, a bandit, a highwayman, a liar, just a real criminal if ever one existed. He tells America to suck it up and stop complaining about the economy. Huh? Here's what he said. You've heard it a million times. I know. Quote, you've heard of mental depression. This is a mental recession. Now, this is despite all the publicity over losing jobs to India, China, illegal immigration, housing, credit problems, record oil prices, collapse of the housing market, collapse of the banking industry, collapse of everything. He went on to say, quote, we may have a recession. We haven't had one yet. What do you call it? What do you call it, turtle boy? He went on to say, quote, we have sort of become a nation of whiners. You just hear this constant whining, complaining about a loss of competitiveness, American decline, blah, 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 blah. Why don't we do this? You know, this is like the people who take Lindsey Graham and put him in the middle of Baghdad and suit him up just like an American soldier and see how long Lindsey Graham lasts. You know, the one who tells the surge is working. Let's take Phil Graham and strip him of all the ultra-rich accoutrement that surround this pig. Just strip him down, you know. Take away his job. Take away his health insurance. Take away his car. Cut back on his grocery allowance so he's eating, cans of Denny Moore beef stew or some such crap, and then stick him out near a dumpster where there happens to be food, tossed out by a restaurant and say, okay, Phil, now start whining! But this is what the ultra-rich do. They do this. It goes all the way back to the terror that followed the French Revolution. Why do you think there was a terror?
Let them eat cake.
Man. And Max Bergman, writing at Huffington, I believe it was at Huffington, a couple of days ago, said last week was a week that should have effectively ended McCain's efforts to become the next president. But, Bergman writes, you wouldn't know it if you watched any of the mainstream media outlets or followed political reporting in the major newspapers. During that week, McCain called the most important entitlement program in the U.S. a disgrace. That would be Social Security. His top economic advisor called the American people whiners. McCain released an economic plan no one thought was serious. He flip-flopped on Iraq. He joked about the deaths of Iranian citizens. He denied making comments that he clearly made twice. All this, and it's not even this is before last Friday. Yet watching and reading the mainstream press, you'd think McCain was having a pretty decent political week. I want to go over some of this with you when we come back from this break. And then we also have a brief moment with Bob, and eventually we're going to get some phone calls, I promise. I promise we will get your phone calls. But you know how it is if, you come back after being gone for a few days and just a stack of stuff here. All of it is really good. I'm trying to get it all in. Great emails from all of you. Okay, not all of you. I'm talking about the normal people out there, Democrats and progressives and liberals. When we do this week's video, I will share with you some of the asinine emails we have gotten. Oh, and snail mail. We're starting to get asinine snail mail. That's great. Sent into the home office in Phoenix, and they send it on to me. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirt? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
Than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
26 before the hour, Max Bergman, writing at Huffington Post, talks about how last week should have been the last week of John McCain's presidential campaign. He called Social Security an absolute disgrace. That's not a quote taken out of context. McCain called one of the most successful and popular government programs, which uses the tax revenues of current workers to support retirement benefits for the elderly, an absolute disgrace, my friends. Now, think for a second, if uttered from Obama's mouth, how that would dominate the news coverage and last Sunday's TV shows, because the pundits would speculate about the massive damage the statement would cause Obama among retirees in Florida. Yo, retirees in Florida, guess what McCain said? McCain's top economic policy advisor calls Americans a bunch of whiners. We talked about that. Iraqi leaders call for a timetable for U.S. to get the hell out of their country. And then McCain gets caught in a bizarre denial and flip-flop. The Iraqis want us to begin planning our withdrawal. But remember, McCain wants to stay forever! So what does McCain say? First, he refuses to accept Maliki's statement as being true. Then he concedes that it was an accurate statement, but it was probably just a political ploy to curry favor with Maliki's own people. And absolutely, that statement will not influence his determination, McCain's, to keep U.S. troops in Iraq indefinitely. But you know, back in 2004, McCain at the Council of Foreign Relations said that if the Iraqis asked us to leave, we would have to go, no matter what. Son of a bitch. Oh, my God. I never thought there could be somebody that would make George Bush look entertaining. McCain's economic plan to cut the deficit has no details and is not believable. Republican as well as Democratic economists say this is a bunch of horse hockey. McCain's deficit plan includes bringing the troops home to free up lots of money. You know, remember the peace dividend? which means that McCain now believes the war will be over soon. Nobody's talking about that, right? The economic forecasts made by his crack team of economists like Phil Graham predict that there will be significant savings during McCain's first term because we will have achieved victory in Iraq and Afghanistan. Tell that to the Taliban. The savings from victory will then be used to pay down the deficit. Okay. Oh, and McCain makes a joke about killing Iranians. Now, remember last year he talked about bomb, 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 Iran. And he was widely criticized for the remark, but he went on and told critics to lighten up, get a life. Lighten up, get a life, get a life. Damn, that's kind of catchy. Get a life. Wow. The Washington Post notes that McCain tried joking about killing Iranians Sunday a week ago. Responding to a question about a survey that shows increased exports to Iran, mainly from cigarettes, McCain said, my friends, maybe that's a way of killing them. He quickly caught himself saying, I meant to as a joke, as his wife Cindy, snake eyes, poked him in the back. Shut up, you son of a bitch. I also own a tobacco distributorship. Maybe that's a way of killing them. Probably the only true thing this freak has said in the entire campaign. McCain distorts his record on veterans' benefits in response to a question from a Vietnam veteran, who then proceeds to call McCain out on it. You can watch that on YouTube. McCain demonstrates he knows nothing about Afghanistan and Pakistan. McCain said, quote, I think if there is some good news, I think that there is a glimmer of improving relationship, my friend, between Karzai and the Pakistanis. Now, you've got to note how crazy this comment is. Just what glimmer is McCain talking about? Is he referring to Karzai's remarks last month in which he threatened military action against Pakistan if the cross-border attacks persisted? Or maybe McCain is talking about Afghanistan's allegations that Pakistan's secret service was involved in a recent assassination attempt on Karzai. a glimmer of improving relationship between Karzai and the Pakistanis. And this guy, the knuckle-dragging Republican thugs out there want this guy as president? Oh, you dumbasses. Oh, my God. All right. I know you all have been waiting for this. Okay. Maybe you haven't, but... And once again, it's time for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Hey, Mike, don't know if you caught this while you were vacationing. It's from a credible news source. George Bush surprised world leaders with a joke about his poor record on the environment as he left the G8 summit in Japan. The American leader, who has been condemned throughout his presidency for failing to tackle climate change, ended a private meeting with the words, "Goodbye from the world's biggest polluter." He then punched the air while grinning widely as the rest of those present, including the UK's Gordon Brown and France's Nicolas Sarkozy, looked on in shock. Mr. Bush, whose second and final term as president ends at the end of the year, then left the meeting at the Windsor Hotel in Hokkaido, where the leaders of the world's richest nations had been discussing new targets to cut carbon emissions. One official who witnessed the extraordinary scene said afterwards, quote, "Everyone was very surprised that he was making a joke about America's record on pollution," end quote. Mr. Bush also faced criticism at the summit after Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian prime minister, was described in a White House press pack given to journalists as one of, quote, "the most controversial leaders in the history of a country known for government corruption and vice," end quote. The White House apologized for what it called sloppy work and said an official had simply lifted the characterization from the Internet without reading it. Had simply lifted the characterization from the Internet without reading it. Concluding the three-day event, leaders from the G8 and developing countries proclaimed a, quote, "shared vision," end quote, on climate change. However, they failed to bridge differences between rich and emerging nations on curbing emissions. Goodbye from the world's biggest polluter. He then punched the air while grinning widely, as the rest of those present, including Gordon Brown and Nicolas Sarkozy, looked on in shock. At first, Mike, I thought that maybe my browser was diverted to a story from the Onion website. I had to read the story again slowly to completely understand that this was a legitimate news item from the Telegraph of the UK. In order to turn this item into a real story for the Onion, all you have to do is rewrite one sentence. He then defecated into his hands while grinning widely and threw the excreta at surprised world leaders and the rest of those present, including Gordon Brown and Nicolas Sarkozy, who looked on in shock. You know, I think it might be possible that George Bush has brought us to the end of satire. As Crooks and Liars noted about Rudy Giuliani, he is now a parody of a caricature of himself. I think Bush has dragged us so far out of the realm of normal experience, the old rules don't seem to apply anymore. Previous standards of reality drape limply over the branches of barren trees like Dolly's The Persistence of Memory. If nothing else, I guess I could thank the Bush regime for forcibly reawakening my appreciation of the surreal. Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. And then there's this. This is from the Air Force Times. You got to love this. All right, well, maybe you don't. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama included a pitch to enlist in the military in a speech here Wednesday, this is Wednesday a week ago, about the need for Americans to be volunteers in all walks of life. Speaking before an audience that included military veterans, families of current service members, and at least one military officer in uniform, Obama said Americans expected a call to serve after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, but, quote, "the call never came," end quote. Obama said he had met thousands of people who joined the military after 9/11, but the burden of serving the U.S., quote, has fallen exclusively on the backs of people in the military and their families, even though they have not received the care and support they deserve, end quote. Part of Obama's national security plan calls for a 65,000-person increase in the Army and a 27,000-person increase in the Marine Corps. Barack Obama said, quote, "We need to ease the burden on our troops while meeting the challenges of the 21st century. That is why I will call on a new generation of Americans to join our military." End quote.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Your inner liberal warrior. All right, let's do some phone calls. Let's start here with Barbara, who's in Cave Creek, Arizona, listening on our flagship KPHX. Hey, Barbara.
Hi. Well, first of all, I wanted to say I used to teach comedy, that New Yorker magazine is not comedy. It's not satire, actually. It's when you actually use, I'm looking for the definition. I pulled it up, and now I can't find it.
Well, satire, no, I don't think it's intended to be satire. It's intended to be parody.
Well, it's not really parody either. It's the use of, satire is the use of irony to ridicule, irony, sarcasm, and ridicule in exposing and denouncing the folly or vice of somebody.
Right.
And Obama was the subject. It would have to be truthful. A satirical cartoon would be Obama sitting in his living room with the flag flying, Michelle's making apple pie, the girls are playing in front of the fire, Bin Laden's picture is being burnt in the fireplace, and he's sitting there reading the magazine, the propaganda magazine. I just found that it was too reflective. It was reflective of what the Nazis used to do, and that was their version of bitter satire against their enemies. I mean,
you think the editors of the New Yorker are enemies?
I don't know who they are. Who owns that paper now? I feel like it was, if they were trying, they failed. I used to teach comedy and comedy writing, and I was a writer. And if somebody brought this to me, I'd go, it was a good try, but you missed the point. The point is that is not what he's like. You want to make the subject of the satire like Rush Limbaugh on the radio saying all the things, but they're actually sitting around. The truth of the matter is the fact that they're the all-American family.
Well, Barb, I hear what you're saying, and thanks for checking in. But I honestly believe, and I said this early in the program, that this is probably going to irritate a lot of our progressive friends of this program. But I think people... people who should have gotten that are not getting it. And I think the reason they're not getting it, like perhaps Barb. I'm not trying to pick on you, Barb. I really am not, but I'm going to use your phone call because you brought it up. The reason the point is not being gotten is because things have been so muddied in this country by the political right. The intent, the only intent, I've listened to two editors from the New Yorker today and the artist who drew the drawing. And all three of them are shocked. Now, this may be because they are culturally isolated, being in New York, maybe not. But they are shocked that the full intent of what they were trying to do was missed by so many otherwise intelligent people. They probably were not expecting anybody in, East Bonehead, Alabama to get it. But the people in East Bonehead, Alabama, or Knuckle Drop, Georgia, don't read The New Yorker. This was almost, and this is where I think the editors of The New Yorker kind of dropped the ball. This was such an inside joke. It really was. This was a joke that eliminated a vast percentage of the U.S. population. Hell, look at the Newsweek poll. 36% of Americans think the guy's a closet Muslim. But, again, I mean, even in a murder trial, you've got to prove intent, don't you? The intent of the author or the cartoonist or the illustrator, whatever you want to call him, and the editors for running it, was to make the point that the right-wing crazies in this country, this would be the absolute, this is their wet dream. This is what they're trying to convince. All right, you can also make the argument that if you have to explain parody, it didn't really work. And I can go along with that too, but I swear to God, so many people who should know better are going absolutely the wrong way on this. My opinion only, has nothing to do with talk radio, has nothing to do with Nova M, has nothing to do with the price of spinach. It has to do with my own personal internal observation that so many people who should have gotten that immediately instead got their feathers ruffled and said, oh, they're attacking Barack Obama. Oh, my God. They really weren't. They were attacking the people who attack Barack Obama. And they were doing it in what I thought was an incredibly effective way. Let's get it all together here. The terrorist fist bump. Obviously, Michelle Obama's a terrorist. Look at the fatigues in the AK-47. Obviously, brother Barack is a Muslim. Look at his clothing. Obviously, they worship Osama bin Laden. Look at the painting over the fireplace wherein is burning an American flag. But that's just way too complicated now, isn't it? For people to, you know, to get at first blush, because we are all so used to the swift boating of anyone who gets in the way of this Republican meat machine. But the cover of the New Yorker in question, and I'll say it again because I believe it, and you believe what you want to believe, and therein lies the foundation for talk radio. The cover of the New Yorker magazine in question was absolutely brilliant.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down
alive. Welcome back, 7 past the hour, the Molloy Show on Nova M Radio. Okay. First of all, this is from Mike in Connecticut, who writes, Mike, I laughed my butt off when I saw this New Yorker cover. It was so over the top, with every hideous lie from the right-winged morons being gloriously illustrated. It was so obviously a middle finger to the idiots who believe this stuff. I also thought it was brilliant. What has happened? I also thought it was brilliant. What has happened to the sense of irony and humor in this country? George Carlin has been dead for only 2 weeks, for God's sake. Mike from Connecticut. Okay. Now, the emails are running pretty much 50-50 on this subject. This is from Roz. Mike, after you read this, I wonder if you will still think the cover of The New Yorker is, quote, brilliant, end quote. Note the connections to Siegelman and Rove. Okay, this is from Daily Kos. Today, one of the diarists wrote, quote, it appears this sleazy hit piece on Obama came from the highest level of the owners of Advance Publications, who own The New Yorker and many other magazines. The owner is a longtime Republican billionaire buddy of the Bush, Samuel Irving Newhouse Jr. He and his brother Don Newhouse evidently worked with some hit pieces along with Rove and other assorted Bush hitmen to help take down a former Democratic governor of Alabama. It didn't take long to find all the sleazy connections. Even though this article pretends to be satire and only dissing the so-called politics of fear about Obama being a Muslim radical, they know all too well the damage is done because 90% of the people who see this anti-Obama cartoon will never bother to read the article. The cartoon image, however, will remain in their minds, which is just what the Bush operatives want to happen. Anyone who thinks Rove, the GOP smear machine, and the Bush cartel are not out to get rid of Obama and put their boy McCain in the White House for Bush's third term in office is too naive and dumb to vote. Well, excuse me. And then from Wikipedia, Samuel Irving Newhouse Jr., nicknamed Cy Newhouse, is the chairman and CEO of Advance Publications, which, among other interests, owns Condé Nast Publications, which owns magazines like Vogue, Vanity Fair, and The New Yorker. Among many others, he's the son of Samuel Irving Newhouse Sr., 37th richest American, ranked that way by Forbes magazine, worth $8.5 billion. Habita. Vanity Fair and New Yorker, two publications that have been publishing by writers of high esteem some of the most devastating attacks on the Bush crime family I have ever seen in print. So the fact that Cy Newhouse is a rich Republican, I guess he's a rich Republican, is he? I don't know. Maybe that means something. I guess so. And then Roz also quotes the Drudge Report. Is the owner, that would be Cy Newhouse, involved in daily editorial decisions in Alabama with regards to the Siegelman Gate affair? The answer is clear, according to a media watchdog. Which writes, the three largest newspapers, plus the internet site Alabama.com, AL.com in Alabama, are owned by Advance Publications, Incorporated. Newhouse Newspapers is the newspaper publishing division. Advance Publications is owned by Samuel Irving Newhouse and his brother Donald. These three newspapers instructed their writers to start every article that they write about Siegelman with this statement. Our newspapers endorsed Riley, and we believe Siegelman to be a crook. End quote. Really? I've read articles in newspapers in Alabama that were owned, I guess, by the Newhouse brothers that didn't begin that way. Oh, well. I'm sorry, Roz. I still think the piece was brilliant. The cartoon was brilliant. I realize that... probably everything is linked somehow, some way, in some manner, in some huge anti-life, pro-death, Dick Cheney-inspired web of intrigue and ugliness. I'm not trying to be a smartass with you. I mean, I'm not. I get your point. I really do. But I don't agree with the point that is being made by so many people that the editors of The New Yorker and the illustrator who did the cover were deliberately, consciously trying to sabotage Barack Obama. I won't go there. And it really doesn't matter to me how erudite someone may be in explaining to me that I'm wrong, why I'm wrong. No, not going to do it. because if I were, I would have to admit that irony and satire and that sort of stuff truly is dead in America. And the day that happens will be, that's one of the milestones for the end of this program. Truly. So, thanks, Roz. This is from Jared. Mike, I got the New Yorker cartoon satire bracket as well. The problem is that the mass media has a bullhorn screaming into an echo chamber that we, quote, quote, should be offended by this. All those halfwits who don't read the New Yorker or any other print newspaper, etc., are going to hear the screaming and thus will conclude, see, I told you so. Yeah, I know. I know. What else here? This is from John. Mike, the New Yorker did a fine job with the parody, and they were probably right in their assumption that the Neanderthals don't read the New Yorker. Hope this is not an insult to Neanderthals. They probably did not anticipate that the pigman and faux news would rub the knuckle-draggers' noses on the cover and try to use it to their advantage. It is kind of unfortunate when cool cleverness like this backfires. Yeah, what else? One more. This is from Tom sent this in. This is the artist comments on the New Yorker. The person who, who did the cartoon, the illustration, I should say. It's not a cartoon. It is a lampoon, not of the Obamas, but of the fears and ignorance of the right wing. The problem I have with it is that it is gratuitous, tells us nothing we don't already know. Oh, this is Tom. This is Tom himself writing this. However, it does underlie the character disease of the liberal mentality, which is fundamentally that of a victim who would rather make themselves clowns in order to please their Republican masters than stand up for their own borrowed convictions. For example, Bush and Cheney are the ones who go to Abu Ghraib or Abu Dhabi and dress up in shakewear and codpieces, not the Obamas. Did or will the New Yorker lampoon that? It isn't daring. It isn't original. It's just a pastiche, a very pedestrian right-wing propaganda and fear. Fine. If they wanted to be clever and urbane, they would have put Obama in a John Kerry wetsuit and Michelle Obama mixing cake batter dressed up as Martha Stewart rather than Aunt Jemima. Well, Tom, I didn't get the Aunt Jemima reference at all. One more. This is from Lee in San Diego. One, first, I'm not an Obama supporter. This parody is as successful as showing a parody of Senator Clinton being blanked. of Senator Clinton as being a monumental bitch who won't let Bill out of her sight. And, of course, she'd be wearing military fatigues. I understand what you're saying, Mike, and I think for a sophisticated audience, this is a brilliant cartoon. But look at the percentage of sophistication in the population. Well, okay. Thank God this on this program, anyway, has a shelf life of about another 10 minutes. Because, once again, a massive, half-witted, asinine distraction that, of course, I, along with you and most of America, just go for. Because that's how we are hardwired, I guess. But to the regular listeners of this program, the normal people, Democrats, progressives, liberals, you know who you are, with whom we have a difference of opinion, let us agree to disagree agreeably. What? All right, we'll be back after the break, and we'll go to your phone calls. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
Well, that ended rather quickly, didn't it, huh? It is 21 past the hour. Ryan Lizza, the illustrator, was on Fresh Air today with Terry Gross, according to Chris in Buffalo, who writes, Mike, for the people that are intelligent enough to listen to NPR, they should check out Terry Gross's interview of Ryan Lizza that was broadcast today. Hopefully they will come to the realization that this cartoon was not intended for the general public. Thanks, Chris in Buffalo. I think what Chris means like I said earlier, it was an inside joke. It's just that, you know, New Yorker cover cartoons, for the most part, are totally unrelated to any article that appears in that particular issue of the New Yorker. Now, I haven't gotten the New Yorker with that particular cover, so I don't know if there was a tie-in article inside or not, and it's irrelevant to me, really. But usually the covers of the New Yorker magazine are very limited in the audience they're trying to reach. And it's not an elitist attitude. It just has to do with the readership of the New Yorker. I mean, Time Magazine does certain covers. Saturday Evening Post used to do certain covers. Mad Magazine does certain covers. And Good Housekeeping does certain covers. The covers of a magazine are designed to appeal to the readership. They're not designed to get new subscribers. That's what the subscription department is for. That's what the mailing, all that crap, all the blow-in cards, all that stuff that are in copies of magazines. The cover art of the New Yorker, like the cover art of any magazine, it is designed to appeal to the readers of the magazine. What the hell? Why is nobody getting that part of this? And it wasn't designed for everybody in America, because everybody in America does not subscribe to the New Yorker. As far as, you know, the web of right wingers involved and so on and so forth. I can only go so far with that, and I realize that sometimes I take it as far as you can possibly take it, but I just can't go there this time with Cy Newhouse and the ownership of the group that owns all these magazines, and there's some, you know, look, media across the board is biased against Democrats, against liberals, against progressives. We all know that. We can stipulate that. We start from that point. But there are still little puddles of progressivism. There are still little writings that are not influenced by the right-wing nutcases. And there are still illustrators who are working out there who are not told over some insidious little luncheon meeting, go get Obama! Really? I'm serious, folks. You know, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is owned by Cox Communications, probably one of the more right-wing publishing behemoths in the country. And yet Mike Lukovich, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist, works for the Journal-Constitution, for Cox Communications, and is about as liberal as they come. And his illustrations reflect that. So, oh, my God. God, and I'm not, this is not a reflection on your emails or your comments. How do we get to this point? We all know the answer how we got to this point, but let me rephrase it. How sad, how disgusting it is we've gotten to this point that a non-general circulation magazine, the New Yorker is not a general circulation magazine. The title gives you a clue. The New Yorker! It has a limited readership. And I've got to believe, until proven otherwise, which I probably will be so proven, that the general readership of the New Yorker got it. I got it! And I don't have any advanced degrees. But I got it. When I saw this today, I thought, oh, no. Oh, no. What is all the controversy about? This is great. This is brilliant. This is hysterical. This knees the right-wingers right in the groin. This is a steel-toed boot right to their Adam's apple. But no. No, 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 no. Not to be. All right. Well, like I say, thank God the shelf life of this particular story on this program is just about fini. We'll be back after this break and take your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us.
Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Five before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Oh my God, Dave is calling from Dallas, listening to KMNY. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike.
Dave is the... what are you, the owner, the manager of our affiliate in Dallas?
Well, yeah, sort of. I consider myself the janitor mostly. Now that we're 24 hours, I work down here from about 5 to the end of your show.
Well, and just so the audience knows, Dave is the guy who put us on in Dallas, and you have been holding for an hour and 30
minutes. Oh, I don't know, a while, but I've been enjoying it, and I just wanted to call and thank you for being the first to get it right all day. Like I said, I've been listening since 5 in the morning. We have, you know, most of the liberal hosts on, and I don't know, the object of the satire in the picture is the Republicans, and that's what I think anyway. I guess, you know, anybody can think anything they want to, but, you know, I think the New Yorker cartoonist piece is a masterpiece, and I don't know why everybody gets so upset about all this.
The only reason I can come up with is what has happened to the sensitivities or the sensibilities of people in this country. We have been put through a meat grinder, Dave, as you know, for the past 15 years, just relentless by these right-wing thugs. Whether it has been Newt Gingrich or Sean Hannity or Limbaugh is really immaterial. The meat grinder has been working 24/7. And I can understand my first reaction today on all of a sudden seeing the emails that were coming to me and reading some of the blog sites about the outrage of the liberal left or the Democrats or the progressives over this cover. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, no, 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 no. You know, and I wish I would have had some sort of a megawatt bullhorn to let everyone know that that wasn't what they were doing. That's not... But
yeah.
on the other hand,
my dad is Ozzie Nelson, basically, for those of your listeners that know who Ozzie Nelson is.
Yeah.
And he brought me up telling me constantly never to take myself too seriously. And I guess that's one of my faults. I guess that's why I'm doing what I'm doing here, because I do kind of take myself seriously. But, you know, if we have any faith left in the general intelligence of the American people, we have to love this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, in fact, my son's a cartoonist, and I'm thinking about having him do one on McCain of similar value, but I'm not sure about what it would help McCain. So.
Probably would help McCain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, McCain is still a media darling no matter what he does.
That's incredible.
But the only thing I could come up with today, Dave, is the reason so many liberals or progressives or Democrats got their bloomers in a wad was maybe a gut-level understanding that this would be misconstrued by the vast majority of the American public. And I think, if this program represents a microcosm, very tiny little corner of the general public, then that is obviously what has happened.
Yeah, it is kind of distressing that one of the other pieces of news today that squeaked by in spite of the cartoon was apparently, according to whatever warped things we have going on now, McCain is pulled within 3 points of Obama. That's just, you know.
Well, that also might be one of the reasons why so many Democrats got so pissed off
today. Yeah, I mean, the Republicans can steal 3 points in their sleep without even breaking a sweat, you know?
Forget the cartoon. It is unbelievable that 42% of Americans would vote for this thug, would even consider a third Bush term. What is wrong? Oh, never mind.
I don't know. My wife told me that we really have to consider moving to Costa Rica or, you know, New Zealand or something. If this really happens, it would just be.
I hear that, but you are going to run KMNY for much longer than.
Well, I'm old enough. I've been lucky all my life, and I figure if I'm struck by lightning or Republicans tomorrow, it'll still be fair, you know.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true.
I'm a recovering coward, you know. when Cindy Sheehan did her thing down in Crawford, and I held back for a couple of days. I really wanted to go down there, and I said, well, they'll get my license plate, you know, and I'm so busted by now that, you know, it just doesn't matter anymore. I guess it's not quite like being an alcoholic. I can't just go back to drinking.
Yeah.
You know, they've probably got my colonoscopy already.
Well, you've become part of Subversive America by running this radio station in Dallas. I mean, my God, in Dallas.
It's the only one in town, you know, and I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to thank you.
Well, no, thank you, Dave. Thanks for putting on all the progressives you've put on, and thanks for putting this program on. But
I'm enjoying it. Whatever's left in my life, at least I'm doing what I want to.
Well, that's about the best can be hoped for. But you and I, and a lot of people agree that the cover was exactly as the New Yorker intended it to be. But again, it's not a general circulation magazine. It has a specific limited readership, or likes to think it does.
And I heard what Roz had to say. You know, I mean, she was right. I mean, I didn't know who owned the New Yorker, but it doesn't surprise me that they're right wingers. But, you know, the guy that I'm leasing this radio station from is a right winger, and you know, money is what they care about. And he's the one that the original Air America operation wrote $1 million hot check to, you know, Evan Cohen.
Oh, yeah?
You know, and so it took a little bit of a, it took a few months of doing the nighttime operation and paying my bills to convince him that I was going to be a good guy. And, you know, but basically, Republicans are all about money.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't seem to, well, it does matter a lot. I guess, how much money did Rupert Murdoch lose doing Fox News?
Oh, my God.
Billions of dollars.
Billions, yeah.
So I guess there's all kinds of Republicans, just like there's all kinds of Democrats. But anyway, it was refreshing after listening to everybody getting heard about this to hear you come out and say that you thought it was a masterpiece, because that was what I thought all day, too.
Well, there you go. There's two of us, all right?
All right. Well, thanks,
Dave. Thanks for checking in. Call once in a while. What the hell?
Sure, maybe I'll do that.
We'll put you on. Even
like I said, I'm a recovering coward. So.
All right.
I'll see you later.
Thanks, Dave. Take care. It is because of people like Dave that we continue to expand the Nova M Radio Network family. So we are deeply grateful. But he had to wait an hour and 46 minutes to get on, just like anybody else, right? Brian is calling from Manchester, New Hampshire, who's also been holding on forever. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. There's three of us that believe that that New Yorker cover was true parody of the finest order. The New Yorker, ever since it's been published on February 21st, 1925 by Harold Ross, it's had a lot of satirical and nonsensical covers, you can almost call that, for a very intellectual magazine. And the fact remains the horribly, morbidly tragic insentience of the American public these days is absolutely, it's just a total star of a sign of the night, the Christmas night, for all of us to see that this republic is dead unless we wake up and realize that, you know, that people could simply realize, even the proudest Obama and Michelle Obama supporter, I still support both of them, that they realize that this is a parody aimed at those conveniently ignorant fascistic swine that are still trying to that use this phony rhetoric of Obama being a Muslim, of his wife being another Angela Davis or beyond that. It's incredible, Mike. Part of the problem comes from we have no educational knowledge of history in this country. I would like some of your young people to the young Obama supporters especially, because I think those are good young people, to keep this great work of history in mind by Martin Burnell. He did it in multi-volume sets, Black Athena, The Afro-Asiatic Roots of Classical Civilization, by Martin Burnell. It talks in volume two I'm working on right now, the archaeological and documentary evidence. And it talks about the Athena and Poseidon, the ancient Greeks, my ancient Greek Hellenic ancestors. They could be Indo-European people. Hello?
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
They could be Indo-European people, but there's much evidence for Egyptian, Southwest Asian, namely today's Iraq, in Asia and African and Somalian and Ethiopian influence, their gods as well on what became the great Hellenic gods of Greece, and what became, in effect, like Hercules had he was kind of a demigod. The Immaculate Conception of Christianity, Mary having a child with God, became Jesus. Mike. But the fact that it's a tragedy. And I was just reading, as this all came along, I was reading Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA by Tim Weiner. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Go, Brian.
And the fact is that it's all part of the same tragedy of America, where we want to be an empire, and we're the stupidest empire in history, I would say. And you brought up also that Miss Universe pageant. There was a gathering of lobotomy malpractice cases that was there. I didn't realize it was held in Ho Chi Minh City.
Brian, I gotta go. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Brian. And before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program, answered your calls, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, podcast master, Ben Birch, the podcast manager, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolfe, writer in residence, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, and of course, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And we will probably have up by Wednesday a new Malloy video for Nova M Founders Club members. If you'd like to become associated with that group, Go to NovaMradio.com and find out how to become a Founders Club member. The video I'm referring to, we try to put up one every week. We do put up one every week, but not last week because we took some time off. But usually it is a reading from the Molloy mailbag in an uncensored, we use the F word and all kinds of ugliness. So, you know, it's certainly R-rated as far as language is concerned. It depends on what people send. You would be surprised at what some people send to this program that they think passes for coherent criticism. So anyway, we share some of that with you and whatever else comes up. So check it out. Probably Wednesday or Thursday, a new one will be up. If you're not a Nova M Founders Club member, and you can afford the $100 a year or $10 a month, we would love to have you become a member. There's a lot of goodies that come with that. Okay, back to the phone calls. Michael is calling from the Bronx in New York. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Welcome back, buddy.
Thanks.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
All right. You know what you were mentioning earlier about the Bush crime family being a bunch of spoilers and people falling for it? You remember what I said to you about 2 years ago, that people say that, impeachment's a waste of time and he'll be out of office in 2 years. I was one of many people that said that just think of the damage that he can do in just the remaining 2 years. And what do we find? We find more casualties in Iraq. The economy is at a stinkhole.
Well, Michael, I was willing to listen to you, but apparently nobody else was. Why doesn't Nancy Pelosi listen to what you put out there?
I don't know why. And look what we're dealing with also is the gas prices. And speaking of gas prices, here's another reason why it makes me mad and why people don't think.
Yeah.
Because of the gas prices, people want to cancel out summer vacation plans. I don't know if I emailed you a plan that I had in which to outsmart these crime families.
I'm sure you probably did.
And the thing is, just like you save up money for your vacation,
yeah,
you save up gas cards so you don't have to worry about shelling out extra cash for gas. The Bush family wants to spoil your plans. I just outsmarted them. Just when they think they have the answers, I change the questions. And if outsmarting them is wrong, I don't want to be right.
I hear you. I get it, Michael. I get it. And, you know, sticking away a couple of gas cards is a good thing. Thanks, Michael. Todd is calling from Coconut, Florida. Where are you calling from, Todd? You're listening to WINZ, but where are you calling
Coconut
from?
Grove.
Coconut Grove.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot, but boy, you're putting me in quite a lineup there.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, you didn't talk much about your holiday. I hope you all had a fulfilling one.
Oh, yeah, we had a great time.
Oh, that's good. Mike, I had sat here and listened tonight and found it quite informative on this Barack Obama thing.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that it is an esoteric cover that should have been in the middle of the magazine, and the problem is that because of the corrupt media, TV media, everyone of course just grabbed it for their own purposes, and I think their purposes are very, and I know you do too, very nefarious. Let me just give you one report, and then I'll wish you well. Over the last 10 days or so, there's been a promo for one of those reality shows where there's about 10 or 12 people moving into a house or something, living together.
Yeah.
And there's one black lady that was part of the promo, and she said, "I'm the only Democrat here, and they're not going to persuade me otherwise." Now, I found that rather curious. I'll leave it at that, Mike, and wish you well.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate you checking in. I just got to go back to the New Yorker cover one more time. If you're a regular reader of the New Yorker, you know that they offer no explanation on the cover of the magazine for their illustration. You either get it or you don't. The only clue that you get is when you open the magazine and on page 2, down at the bottom, where you're into the table of contents, it will, the illustrator will always title his or her illustration. The title of this one was, or is, The Politics of Fear. So, you know, again, I certainly don't fault otherwise rational people from having a reaction to this cover. But I wish that, I don't know what I wish. It really doesn't matter. This is where we live. This is what we're involved in. This is what passes for outrage in America. Not to minimize it, but in a magazine cover. So anyway, have a good night. Thanks for participating. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.